You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Story: when I grew up in Longview, Washington, my dad worked at the Weyerhaeuser Mill, and we lived near the edge of one of their massive timber properties, thousands of acres of dense forest. I'm talking deep, quiet woods where you could walk for hours and never see another person. That was just how things were out there in the 90s. Me and my two closest friends, Nate and Jesse, would spend entire weekends hiking, building forts, and pretending we were explorers. This happened when I was around 12. It was late August, just before school started. We were doing one of our longer hikes, maybe 5 miles in, deeper than we'd ever been before. The tree line thinned a little, and we came across an overgrown trail we'd never noticed before. We followed it for maybe half a mile when we spotted a rusted barbed wire fence and a collapsing wooden gate. "Looks like a farm or something," Jesse said, crouching to look under the wire. "Think anyone lives out here?" Nate asked. I remember laughing. "Not anymore." Past the fence, the forest opened into a clearing, and there it was, this old, sagging, two-story farmhouse, like something out of a black-and-white photo. Roof half caved in, vines crawling up the porch. But what struck me, what still strikes me, was how intact everything was. Not smashed, not burned, just abandoned. Like the people inside had gotten up mid-dinner and left, only they never came back. We stood there for a minute before Jesse said, "Let's check it out." The porch steps groaned under our weight. The front door was stuck, so Nate kicked it. The wood splintered, and we stepped inside. It was like time had stopped in 1955. No dust, no graffiti, no animal nests, just frozen. I remember the wallpaper first, yellowing roses peeling at the corners, a rotary phone on a small table, a framed picture of a family in Sunday clothes. There was still mail on the coffee table, magazines and envelopes with bright red stamps. Return to sender. The dates were all the same, June 1956. There were dishes in the sink, spoons laid out next to bowls on the table like someone was just about to eat. We walked through the kitchen slowly, not talking. The air was heavy, like a house that hadn't breathed in decades. A rancid, sweet stink clung to everything. One of the cabinets had burst open, cans had exploded, glass jars full of some kind of preserves had leaked and crusted into a dark amber mess. Upstairs, the bedroom still had beds made, clothes folded in the drawers. One of the beds even had a pair of slippers sitting neatly at the foot like someone was planning to come back to them. We didn't say it, but all three of us felt the same thing. Something was wrong here. Not just old wrong, off wrong. In the back of the house, behind the kitchen, we found a stairway leading down to a cellar. It wasn't on our list of places to explore, but Jesse was always the one who pushed. He pulled out his flashlight and headed down. I followed reluctantly. Nate stayed upstairs, saying something about the air making his head hurt. The basement was small, cement floor, shelves lined with old mason jars, dusty bottles. It smelled like mildew and rust. There was an old fridge in the corner, the kind with the heavy latch handle. It was unplugged, the cord coiled neatly beside it. "Think it still opens?" Jesse asked. I told him not to, but of course he did. It opened with a hiss. Inside, everything had rotted into this foul black mush. The smell hit us like a wall, and we both gagged, backing away fast. Jesse slammed it shut and wiped his mouth. But just as we turned to head back up, we heard a sound behind us, a click, like something latching shut. We froze. "It's the fridge," I whispered, but Jesse was already shining the light back toward it. The handle was moving, not creaking, not loose, moving, like something inside was trying to open it. We backed up toward the stairs. Jesse turned to run, and that's when the light died. Total black, and then knocking from inside the fridge. 1, 2, 3, slow, deliberate, like knuckles on metal. I don't remember breathing. I just remember Jesse grabbing my wrist, yanking me up the stairs. "Go, go, go," he shouted. We nearly barreled into Nate at the top. He must have heard it too, because he was pale as chalk and already heading for the front door. We sprinted out of that house, through the porch, past the skeletal remains of a chicken coop, some of the bones still strung together like the birds had just dropped and dried in place. There were pigs too, and something bigger in the pasture, its ribs sticking out like twisted rebar. We didn't stop running until we were well past the fence, past the overgrown trail and halfway back to town. When we finally stopped, panting and bent over, Jesse asked, "What the hell was that?" I couldn't answer. None of us could. The next weekend, we tried to find the trail again. I swear we retraced our steps exactly, but it was gone. The barbed wire fence, the gate, the clearing, gone. Like the woods swallowed it whole. We never told anyone. Story 2. I don't talk about this with most people. I don't think they'd believe me, and honestly, I don't blame them. This happened in southern Illinois around 3 years back. I was staying on some land that belonged to my cousin's family, tucked deep in the Shawnee National Forest area. They had an old raised hunting cabin out there on stilts. Nothing fancy, but it was dry, had a working wood stove, and it wasn't crawling with meth heads like the shelters closer to town. I was homeless at the time, and I didn't need much. Just quiet, a roof, and a place to rest. The cabin sat maybe a half mile from where I parked my car, near an old logging road. I'd do little odd jobs when I could get them, make a drive into town a couple times a week, grab what food I could afford, fill up some jugs with water. It wasn't glamorous, but I got by. Nights were usually quiet out there, and I actually started to like it. One day I was just killing time, walking the trail that ran behind the cabin, poking around, looking for dry firewood. The path wasn't marked or anything, just one of those deer trails you start using and eventually wearing a bit deeper. I'd followed it a few times before, but never all that far. That morning I went a little farther. The woods were real still, not even birds chirping. It was one of those weirdly warm fall days where the humidity clings to your neck, but the leaves are still dropping like it's October. About 20 minutes in, I came to a clearing I hadn't seen before. Looked like a spot where some old fence or structure had once stood. Broken posts, rotting timbers, even a rusted metal wheel half buried in the dirt. Then I saw them. At first I thought it was just feathers, like maybe a fox had gone nuts with a goose or two. But no, there were dozens. Dead geese, all over the clearing, some lying across the beams like someone had posed them, necks stretched out grotesquely. Others looked like they'd been dropped midair and shattered on impact, necks torn clean off, wings twisted the wrong way, bones sticking up through the dirt like someone had tried to plant them. It was like they'd been mutilated and then scattered on purpose. And the smell, it wasn't rot, not exactly. It was dry, metallic, almost like scorched feathers or burnt hair. It hit the back of my throat and stuck there. But the weirdest thing, there weren't any tracks, not from people, not from animals. The dirt was dry and loose. If anything had walked in, you'd know. But it was like the geese had just exploded right where they were. I stood there trying to make sense of it. I even muttered something like, "What the actual hell?" And that's when I saw the backpack. Old, moldy, torn down the middle like it had been gutted. Candy wrappers everywhere. I couldn't tell the brand. They were too water damaged. But they looked old. Not ancient, just maybe left out for a year or more. Something about the backpack creeped me out more than the geese, though. It was like someone had been camping out here. But if they had, where were they? I crouched down to get a better look, and that's when I heard it. A shriek. Not an animal. Not a person. I know what coyotes sound like, and bobcats, even owls when they get that screechy call. But this was something else. It didn't echo right. It didn't come from somewhere. It just seemed to exist all around me, like it was vibrating inside my ears, like the trees were shrieking, like the air itself had suddenly learned how to scream. I spun around, thinking maybe someone was messing with me, but there was no one, just trees, and that god-awful noise getting sharper, like it was digging into the back of my skull. I took a step back and tripped over something, maybe one of the fence posts, and hit the ground hard. Right then, the shriek shifted, like it noticed me, and then it stopped. Dead silent, like it had been cut with scissors. I didn't wait. I didn't grab the backpack. I didn't take a picture. I didn't even look behind me. I ran that half mile back to the cabin, slammed the door, and shoved the old couch in front of it. That night, I lit every candle I had and kept...
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
The wood stove roaring just for the noise. I didn't sleep. Next morning, I packed what I could carry and left. Didn't even lock the door. I still don't know what I saw out there. Maybe someone was sacrificing birds for some ritual crap. Maybe it was a predator I didn't recognize. But there were no prints, no blood trails, just bones, feathers, and that sound. That thing that knew where I was. I haven't been back since. I sold the car a month later and used the cash to get a room up near Carbondale. Lost the woods for good. Story 3, I'm from Southeast Missouri, small town near the Boothill. Not much going on but soybean fields and timber. I was 19 when this happened, still living at home, working on and off for my dad hauling grain. We had a piece of rented farmland tucked way back off a gravel road, surrounded by dense woods on 3 sides. I'd been through those trees 100 times with my brother looking for shed antlers, hunting, or just wasting time. But this was different. It was a Saturday early spring, ground still half frozen in the shade. My brother Caleb and I decided to hike the creek that snaked along the edge of the field. It had rained the week before, so the banks were soft and gave under your boots like stale cake. We followed it deeper into the woods than usual, chasing raccoon tracks and trying to out-stupid each other by throwing sticks across the stream. A few hundred yards in, Caleb stopped dead and sniffed the air. "You smell that?" I did. Thick, sweet, clinging, like when you hit a deer on the road and find it a few days later. "Something's dead," I said, and we both knew it wasn't just one thing. Caleb's got a weird tolerance for gross stuff, but I could tell even he was unsettled. We kept walking. The creek widened and bled into a marshy patch neither of us remembered seeing before. The grass was knee-high and the ground was spongy. Not water exactly, more like soaked moss and slime. "I don't like this," Caleb muttered. "Yeah, well, let's get through it and loop back," I said, more to convince myself. We hopped from clump to clump, trying to keep our boots dry. 100 yards in, we found a solid patch, high ground, less soggy. That's when I saw it. I looked up and stopped moving. Caleb nearly bumped into me. "What the hell?" Dead center of the clearing was a pile. Not trash, not brush, a pile of animals. Carcasses, hundreds, maybe more. Skinned, bone white in spots, blood black in others. Tangled in a heap like someone had been stacking them for years. It was taller than me by a good 2 feet and wider than a pickup. "I'm gonna be sick," Caleb said, backing up. I couldn't look away. Deer skulls, dog paws, foxtails. The smell was unbearable. Flies droned low to the ground, not even buzzing around like normal, just hovering. And the worst part, it wasn't old. Some of the bodies were fresh, pink, glossy. Others were dry and curling like old jerky. "Who the hell does this?" I whispered. Then we heard it, a slosh, behind us. Caleb spun around. "Someone's out here." The marsh was quiet. No birds, no frogs, no wind. Just the thick, wet hush of something moving where we just walked. We crouched low, barely breathing. I thought maybe it was a buck or a coyote, but the steps were wrong, slow, dragging. Too heavy for an animal, too uneven for a person, like someone pulling a soaked blanket across a floor. Then just at the tree line, something stepped out. I only saw part of it. Look, I know how that sounds, but it wasn't like in movies where you get a good look and describe its eyes and teeth and all that. It was, I don't even know if it had a shape. It was pale, tall, wrong. Caleb muttered something under his breath I didn't catch. I was frozen. I don't freeze easy, but I swear to God I couldn't feel my legs. This thing stood there half in shadow, as if it was watching us. But it didn't have eyes, not that I could see. Then it took a step forward, and the ground underneath it didn't move right. It didn't sink into the marsh. It stood on top of the waterlogged ground like it weighed nothing at all. That's when we ran. No plan, just pure fear. We ran through the marsh, not caring if we fell in or twisted ankles. I slipped once and went knee-deep in cold mud. Caleb yanked me out, nearly ripping my arm off. I don't know how far we ran, probably less than it felt, but we didn't stop until we were back at the gravel road, gasping like we'd been chased by dogs. We didn't speak, just got in the truck and left. That night I didn't sleep. I kept picturing the pile, the flesh, that thing. A week later, my dad asked us to check on the Southfield again. We made excuses. A few months later, someone else rented that property, and we never went back. We never talked about it again either. Story 4, I grew up just outside Duluth, Minnesota. Cold winters, dense forests, and long stretches of quiet that most people from cities don't understand until they've been out there for themselves. I've always been comfortable in the woods, hiking, fishing, camping. That kind of silence you get surrounded by trees? I usually like it. It's peaceful. But what happened last year changed how I feel about being alone out there. I had taken a few days off work and decided to do a solo backpacking trip through a less traveled trail near the Superior Hiking Trail. It was early spring, but in northern Minnesota, that still means patches of snow, slush, and a chill that stays in your bones. I'd been out there before. Nothing too wild. Just 3 nights. One in, two out. I didn't expect anything unusual. It's a safe area, and I'm experienced enough to not get myself into trouble. That first night, though, I noticed something was off. It wasn't anything obvious. Just this. Stillness. No wind, no birds, no rustling branches. Not even the high-pitched drone of bugs you can sometimes hear, even in the cold. I didn't hear anything. And when I say anything, I mean it was dead silent. Like someone had put me in a soundproof box and dropped it in the middle of the woods. At first I thought maybe a storm was coming. That pressure you get in your ears before lightning rolls in. But when I checked the sky, it was clear. Moonlight was bright enough to see the outline of the trees. Still that silence. It was unnatural. I made camp anyway. Small fire, nothing major. I sat with my back to a tree, eating one of those freeze-dried meals and sipping from my canteen. I kept looking around like I expected to see something just outside the firelight. But there was nothing. Not even animal tracks in the snow. And that's rare, especially that time of year. At some point, maybe around 10 p.m., I crawled into my tent and zipped up. I laid there with my headlamp off, trying to let the silence just be silence. But it wasn't right. I could hear my own breathing like it was piped through a speaker. Every time I shifted in my sleeping bag, the nylon rubbed loud enough to make me flinch. Then I heard it. A twig snapped. Not like the kind of snap you hear from a squirrel or a rabbit. This was slow, heavy, one crack, then nothing. I froze. I held my breath and just listened. Another snap. This time closer. Definitely not an animal. Too deliberate. Like a person stepping slowly, carefully. I grabbed my flashlight and flicked it on. Nothing. I unzipped the tent as quietly as I could and stepped out, boots crunching faintly in the snow. Hello? I called. Is someone out there? Nothing. I turned the light toward the trees, sweeping back and forth. My breath fogged in the cold air, and I suddenly realized just how loud that alone sounded. There wasn't even wind in the trees. It was like the whole forest had been vacuum sealed. I took a few steps toward the sound, flashlight raised. I was about 20 feet from the tent when I saw it. At first, I thought it was a trick of the light, something caught in a branch maybe. But no, there was something behind a tree, tall, too tall to be a person. The bark was wide enough to obscure most of it, but I could see part of a leg, pale, bare, not human exactly, but shaped like it, just stretched. I said, "Hey," before I even thought about it. It didn't move. I took a step back. That's when it leaned out from behind the tree. It didn't step forward. It leaned, like its whole upper body slid out unnaturally far without the legs moving. Its head was too round. No face, just a flat, smooth surface, like pale clay that hadn't been shaped yet. I ran. I didn't even think about grabbing my pack. I sprinted back to the tent, unzipped it, and dove inside. I yanked the zipper up like it was going to protect me from that thing. I held my breath and turned off my light. Nothing happened. No sound, no footsteps, just that same crushing silence. I stayed like that for what felt like hours, too afraid to move or make a sound. Every now and then, I'd strain to hear something, anything, but there was nothing. It was like the woods themselves were holding their breath. Sometime before dawn, I must have passed out from exhaustion. When I opened my eyes again, there was light coming through the tent fabric. I got out and looked around. No tracks, no broken branches, no signs that anything had been there. Even the snow around the tree where I'd seen it, untouched. But my pack was gone. I'd left it near the fire pit. It wasn't there. I searched the area for a while, but it had vanished. Like someone, or something, had taken it and just walked off without leaving a trace. I didn't spend another night out there. I hiked straight back to the trailhead with nothing but my flashlight and a bottle of half-frozen water I'd stashed in my coat. I didn't tell anyone for a while. Story 5. I've never told this to anyone outside of my brother and two friends who were there. It still messes with my head, and honestly, the less people think about that place, the better. But here I am, writing this out at 3 in the morning, wide awake in my apartment in Bozeman, Montana, because I can't stop replaying that night. Maybe getting it out will help. This happened back in 2019. I was 26. My brother Kyle and I, plus our close friends Marcus and Tyler, had planned a 10-day camping trip through parts of Yellowstone and Grand Teton. We were using a camper for the main part of the trip, but wanted to break it up with a couple of real backpacking hikes to get deeper into the wilderness. One of those hikes was the Cascade Canyon Trail in the Tetons. We started the loop early in the day. It's absolutely stunning out there. Raw cliffs, wildflowers, mountain streams. You don't realize how silent the backcountry gets until you stop walking. We were maybe 10 miles in by early evening and decided to set up camp at a small clearing just off the trail. Flat ground, a little water nearby, nothing out of the ordinary. It was remote, but that's what we came for. After dinner, we sat around telling dumb stories and joking about grizzlies. Around 10 p.m., we crawled into the tent, one of those big four-person deals, and tried to sleep. Somewhere around 2 a.m., I woke up. You know when something's just off and your brain kicks into high alert before your body does? That's what this was. I was on the far left side of the tent. Tyler was next to me, then Kyle, then Marcus by the zipper entrance. All of us were awake, breathing slow and shallow like we were trying not to be noticed. No one said a word. There were footsteps right outside the tent. Not an animal, not four-legged. They were careful steps, slow, measured, like someone was sneaking, trying to be quiet but not quite managing it. Then we heard voices, two of them. I still get sick thinking about the way they sounded. Not drunk, not high, just wrong. Like they were talking low on purpose but couldn't fully keep their tone flat. Almost excited. I'll never forget the first thing I made out clearly. I think there's three or four inside. It was a man's voice. Calm. Too calm. Then the other one whispered something I couldn't catch, and the first guy replied, "No, not yet. Let's just get out of here." Then silence. No footsteps walking away. No rustling. Just gone. I didn't realize how hard I was gripping the handle of my pocket knife until my hand cramped. I could hear Tyler's breathing get weird, almost wheezy. Kyle whispered, "You heard that, right?" No one responded. We just laid there, frozen, waiting for something else to happen. Nothing did. At first light, we packed up. No breakfast, no coffee, nothing. We moved fast. Really fast. We hiked those 12 miles out in 3 hours flat. Didn't even stop to rest. I don't remember talking much during the hike. Just the sound of boots hitting the trail and branches whipping past. When we got to the ranger station, we looked like hell. Muddy, sweating, out of breath. The ranger behind the desk gave us a look and asked if we were okay. I told her what happened. Voices outside the tent, the exact words we heard. Her face changed immediately. She stepped into a back room and brought out another ranger, older guy with a beard. He asked a bunch of questions. What time it was, what direction we came from, where exactly we set up. When I mentioned Cascade Canyon and the voices, he got this strange look and said, "We got a call like that around 3 this morning. Similar story, different hikers, same area. They said they'd send someone to check it out. I asked them if there had been any other incidents, and the guy just kind of paused and said, not lately. Nothing more. We left it at that. Didn't push. I think all of us just wanted to get back to the camper and pretend it didn't happen. None of us talked about it again until months later. We were hanging out at my place, drinking, and Tyler brought it up. He said the worst part wasn't the voices. It was what he saw just before we broke camp. He'd gotten up to take a piss maybe 30 minutes before sunrise. Didn't go far, just a little off to the right of the tent. While he was out there, he saw a shape in the trees. Not moving, just standing there, maybe 30 or 40 feet away. He couldn't make out much, just that it was tall and still, watching him. He didn't say anything at the time because he didn't want to panic the group. But when we hiked out, he kept checking over his shoulder every few minutes. I wish he hadn't told me that. I haven't been back to the Tetons since. I still hike, still camp, but not out there. Not that deep. And I don't sleep in tents anymore. Not unless I'm with a group and armed. Story 6, I live in Ely, Minnesota. Real far north, not too many people around. Winters are brutal, but the summers, those are the reason folks like me stick around. I do trail maintenance for the state park system, mostly solo jobs. I've hiked pretty much every square mile around here. That's why what happened last June still keeps me up at night. I had a work order to check some damaged signage off a trail near Lake Jeanette, real remote. You can't drive all the way in. You park at a turnout and walk maybe 2.5 miles in. I've done that trail dozens of times. It's peaceful, kind of swampy in spots, full of birch and spruce. That morning was clear, quiet, normal. I just passed the old ranger marker about a mile in when I saw it. Boot prints. Not unusual, but these were fresh and deep. The trail hadn't been used in weeks. They weren't from a hiker either. Too far apart, like someone was running. I radioed it in. Standard procedure. Possible off-trail activity, I said. Nothing urgent. They logged it and told me to keep an eye out. I kept following the prints. They led off the trail about 30 yards down a small ravine. That's where I found the campsite. But it wasn't normal. First off, no tent. Just a tarp, strung low, and all the gear was scattered. Food bags torn open, not by animals, cut open. A fire pit full of ashes, still warm. One small folding chair, tipped over. A hunting knife stuck into a tree trunk. It looked like whoever was here left in a hurry. But here's the part that really got me. The tarp was shredded. I mean shredded like something with claws had raked through it. I stood there looking around. Everything was too quiet. No birds, no wind, just this weird pressure in the air, like when a storm's about to roll in. Then I heard it, not far, maybe 30, 40 yards away, a crunch like branches underfoot. I froze. "Hello?" I called out. "Park Service. You all right?" Nothing. Then another crunch. Closer. Now I carry a sidearm. Not standard issue, but legal in my role. I unholstered it and backed up slowly toward the trail. Whatever it was circling. I started hearing breathing. Slow, wet, heavy. I couldn't see anything, but the trees ahead, some of them, started moving. Just slightly. Like something was weaving through them. Too big to stay hidden, but fast. Real fast. And then it screamed. It wasn't a bear. it wasn't a wolf. I've heard both. I've heard cougars, even a lynx once. This was none of those. It sounded wrong, like a person trying to scream through a throat full of water. Gurgling, high-pitched and furious, I turned and ran. Full sprint back up the ravine, heart pounding so hard I felt sick. I got back on the trail and didn't stop. Didn't look back. I just ran. I could hear it behind me, breaking branches, breathing, following. 2 miles. I ran those 2 miles like I was being chased by death itself. Right before the trailhead, I turned around. Nothing there, just still trees and the sound of wind picking up. I didn't stop running until I got to my truck. Threw the gear in, radio dispatch. I was breathing too hard to explain much, but they sent backup. By the time they got out there, whatever it was, gone. They found the campsite, confirmed it had been used recently. No sign of the person, no ID, no name. Gear was registered from an outfitter in town, but they said no rentals had gone out that week under that description. Later, I went back through the report logs and found something that made my blood run cold. 3 years ago, another ranger, older guy named Jeff, filed a similar note, same trail. Signs of struggle at illegal campsite, unknown animal activity, no subject located. Then he requested reassignment, retired 2 months later. I called him, found his number in an old staff list. He picked up, recognized my name from the park directory. I asked him about it. He went quiet. Then he said, "If you saw it, you'd know. Don't go back there. It's not ours." That's what he said. It's not ours. I haven't been back since. I keep getting assignments near that area, but I swap with other guys. No one asks why. Here's the thing, though. I still hike sometimes on my own. You don't live up here unless you love the woods. But I don't go off trail anymore. Not ever. Because every now and then, out past the edge of where people go, you find things that weren't meant to be found. And sometimes, they find you. Story 7. I live just outside Meridian, Mississippi. Grew up hunting, fishing, all of that. My daddy taught me to respect the woods, and I always felt comfortable in them, even alone. But what I saw that day in Clark County, that changed everything. I haven't set foot in that patch of pine since, and I never will again. It was early December. Cold had finally set in for real, and I'd taken a day off work to scout deer trails near an old cutover I hadn't been to in years. I loaded my rifle, my thermos of coffee, and a sandwich into the truck and headed south before sunrise. I was alone as usual. The first few hours were uneventful, quiet, peaceful. Nothing but squirrels and the occasional crunch of a deer far off. I followed an old logging trail deeper than I normally go, trying to find fresh signs. Around noon, I came across something strange. It looked like an old rock foundation, just a few feet of crumbling wall sticking out of the pine needles and brush. I almost missed it. Then I noticed more stones, weathered, gray, standing upright. Headstones, about 7 or 8 of them, crooked and half sunk into the ground. The names were faded, but I could make out some. Baker, Lillian, Elizabeth. All of them died in the 1860s. One was as young as 3. Another was infant son, 1865. No adult men, not one. Just women and children. My guess was the men had gone off to fight in the war and never came back. Maybe the family starved. Maybe disease. I don't know. But the place had that heavy feeling, the kind where the air goes still and you stop hearing birds. I was about to turn back when I noticed the well. It sat off to the side, nearly covered in vines. The wooden structure had rotted away, but the stone shaft was still intact. No lid, just a black hole in the ground. I walked over, thinking maybe it was deeper than it looked. Tossed a pine cone down. I counted. 1, 2, 3. Nothing. No splash. No thud. Nothing. Just silence. That's when it started to feel wrong. I backed away and turned to head back to my stand. But as I moved, I heard something behind me. Something soft. Like a whisper, but not in words. Just breathe. I spun around. Nothing. But I swear to God, the air was different, charged, like a thunderstorm was about to break. Then I heard it again, this time clearer, a voice from the direction of the well. Help! It was so faint, I thought I imagined it. Then it came again, louder. Help me! I froze. Every instinct said run, but I couldn't move. I looked at the well and stepped closer, one foot at a time, rifle gripped tight. The voice was coming from down there, from inside the well. It didn't sound like a grown person. It was a child, a little girl. Her voice cracked like she'd been crying for hours. Please, I'm cold. I looked down, but I couldn't see a thing. Just pitch black. I said, who's down there? My voice sounded too loud, shaky. No answer. Then slowly, he's coming. That's when I noticed the smell. It hit me all at once, like something had died weeks ago and just now got stirred up. Rot, wet earth, metal. My eyes watered and I gagged. Then I heard something else. Not the girl. This was something scraping, climbing, stone against stone. I didn't wait. I ran. I didn't care about the trail. I barreled through branches, tripped over roots, scraped my face on thorns. I didn't stop running until I hit the edge of the cutover where I parked. I jumped in my truck, locked the doors, and sat there for 5 minutes trying to get my breath back. My heart was pounding so hard I thought I was going to pass out. I drove home in silence, didn't turn the radio on, didn't touch the coffee or sandwich. Just kept thinking about that voice and the way it said, he's coming. That night I couldn't sleep. I kept hearing sounds outside, branches tapping the window, footsteps on the porch that weren't there when I looked. The next morning I called the local sheriff's office, told them I found an old graveyard and a well that might be dangerous to hikers. I didn't mention the voice. I didn't want them thinking I was drunk or crazy. The deputy called me back 2 days later, said they went out, but couldn't find the graves or the well. Said there was no foundation, no cemetery, nothing. Just woods. He laughed, told me I probably saw some old survey markers and spooked myself, but I know what I saw, and I know what I heard. Story 8. I live in Arvada, Colorado, and I used to do a lot of solo hiking and backpacking on weekends. Usually nothing serious, just me, a day pack, and a thermos of gas station coffee. I liked the quiet, liked clearing my head, but I haven't stepped foot in the woods since that day outside Manitou Springs. This was about 3 years ago. A buddy of mine had mentioned these old abandoned train tunnels off Highway 24. West of the Waldo Canyon trailhead, there's this gravel lot tucked between the cliffs and the road. You can barely see it if you're not looking. He told me about the tunnels like they were a fun curiosity, something hikers stumbled across all the time. Sketchy but cool, he said. Great views, little creepy at night. I went on a Saturday morning. Weather was perfect, clear skies, mid-60s. I parked in that gravel lot, crossed the eastbound side of the highway, and climbed the steep path up. It's about a 500-foot climb, mostly loose gravel and dirt. Kind of a pain in the ass, honestly. But when I reached the top, the view made it worth it. You can see the entire canyon from up there. There are 6 tunnels total, and a 7th that's mostly caved in. They run along the old rail line, now just rusted bolts and busted wooden planks. I walked through the first 5 pretty quickly. Each one was dark but short enough that daylight poured in from the other side. I had a headlamp and a flashlight, but I didn't use them at first. Then came Tunnel 6. Tunnel 6 is longer. You can't see the end when you're standing at the entrance. It's just a black hole carved into the rock. Something about it felt off. There was this weird drop in temperature as I stepped inside. Not just cooler, cold. Like walking into a basement after a snowstorm. I flicked on my flashlight. It was one of those long, heavy-duty mag lights. Bright beam. I wasn't scared exactly. Just cautious. The silence inside the tunnel was thick. No echo from my footsteps. Just the crunch of gravel and the occasional drip of water from the ceiling. About halfway through, I stopped. My flashlight flickered. Once, then again. I tapped it. Nothing. Then it came back on, but it felt weaker somehow. The beam didn't stretch as far. That's when I noticed something lying up ahead, maybe 20 feet out. Looked like a pile of clothes at first, but as I got closer, I realized it wasn't that. It was a figure, not a person, not exactly. It was about the size of a man, but the proportions were off, the limbs too long, the shoulders hunched, and the skin, or whatever it had for skin, was pale, almost white, no features on the face, just smooth blank fabric, like an old mannequin or a faceless doll. Its chest was torn open, stuffing spilled out like guts, white polyester, stained at the edges with something dark. There were long slashes across it where the face should have been, and down low between the legs, more cuts, like someone had attacked it with a knife. I froze. My flashlight flickered again. Then I heard it, shuffling, behind me. It was deliberate, slow, scraping footsteps on gravel. Not an echo, not mine. Something else. Something in the tunnel with me. I spun around and shined the light back toward the entrance. Nothing. Just the tunnel walls glistening with damp. But the footsteps didn't stop. They got closer. I don't know how to explain this part. The light caught something, just for a second. It wasn't human. Crawling along the ceiling, arms too long, fingers hooked, pale and wet. I saw the shine of its skin, like raw meat. No face, just that same blank canvas. And it moved fast. The flashlight died. I ran. I didn't look back. I ran straight through the rest of the tunnel, slipping on the gravel, nearly tripping over the tracks. I could hear it behind me, something dragging, scraping, too fast for footsteps, but not quite crawling. When I burst out the other side, I didn't stop. I didn't turn around. I ran all the way back past the other tunnels, back to the trail, and damn near fell down that steep hill getting to my car. When I got in, I locked the doors and just sat there for 10 minutes, shaking, staring at the trees. I couldn't even start the engine. I kept expecting to see it again, peering down at me from the ridge. But I never did. I drove home eventually. Haven't gone hiking since. Story 9. I'm from Ogden, Utah, and this happened last October, right before the first snow. I usually hike the Bonneville Shoreline Trail on weekends to clear my head. That day, I parked near the old quarry lot, but instead of hitting the main path, I veered onto a side trail I'd never noticed before. No signs, no markers, just a narrow dirt line threading through some scrub oak and junipers. It looked older, less used. I figured it might loop back around. The sky was gray, and I remember the air felt wrong. Not cold, just flat, dead. I chalked it up to the weather and kept going. Maybe an hour in, I came around a bend and stopped dead. There were two big trees across the path, like someone had deliberately dragged them there to form this arch, like a gateway. Their roots were upturned and sun-bleached, and wedged at the top of each trunk was an elk skull, their hollow eyes staring straight ahead, locked on the path like they were watching whoever passed under. I stood there for a second, just confused. It didn't look like windfall. These were big trees, and those skulls didn't just roll into place. Someone built that. I figured maybe it was some edgy art thing. Creepy, but whatever. I ducked under and kept walking. And instantly, like flipping a switch, I got that feeling. You know when something's off? Like your body knows before your brain does? I got full-body goosebumps and this chill that went straight down my spine. I stopped and looked around, but nothing was there. Nothing obvious, anyway. I tried to keep moving, but every step felt like I was walking deeper into something I wasn't supposed to be in. I made it maybe 10 more minutes before I turned around. I didn't even question it. I just knew I needed to get out of there. I'd been heading back for about 5 minutes when I realized something was wrong. Everything was quiet. No birds, no wind. Just nothing. And it wasn't like I noticed the quiet. It was more like I noticed how loud my breathing was, how loud the crunch of my boots sounded. That's when I knew I wasn't alone out there. I stopped walking, just stood there, and scanned the woods. Nothing moved, not even branches. I turned slowly, knife already in hand. Yeah, I carry a fixed blade, mostly for safety or in case I run into a cougar. But there was nothing. No sound, no motion, just that electric charge in the air, like something was watching, waiting. I started moving again, faster this time, not quite running, but not taking my time either. I just wanted to get back past that damn archway. As I got close to it, I realized something that hadn't clicked before. Those elk skulls, they weren't dry. Not really. From a distance, they looked old, sure. But up close, you could see they hadn't been out in the sun long. Bits of sinew clung around the jaws. Flies were gathering. And the trunks? Freshly fallen. The bark was still damp underneath. The brake lines were too clean, like they hadn't fallen. They'd been cut and moved into place. That's when I froze, because I heard something, not behind me, not in front, above. I looked up slowly into the bare branches of a nearby tree, and I saw it, just for a second, not clearly, not fully, just movement, a shape, something large, thin, crouched in the branches like a spider, pale, long arms, no sound. It didn't move when I spotted it. It just stared. I didn't think. I ran. I ducked under the arch, full sprint now, the knife still clutched in my fist, crashing through the brush, jumping roots and rocks. I don't even remember getting back to the car. One second I was in those trees and the next I was slamming the door shut and locking it. I sat there shaking, staring at the trailhead, waiting to see if it would follow. Nothing did. I drove straight home and didn't sleep that night. Hell, I didn't sleep for days. Kept thinking about those skulls, about how deliberate.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
It all looked. And whatever I saw up there, whatever was watching me, it was smart enough to set that up. Or maybe it was a warning. Story 10. I grew up in Kalispell, Montana. We're talking deep mountain country. Glacier National Park in your backyard, elk in your front yard, and more trees than people. I've been camping since I was a kid. But what happened that night my junior year of high school? That wasn't normal. I don't even know how to explain it right. There were four of us, me, Darren, Jake, and Marcus. We weren't dumb kids. We had gear, food, GPS, maps, and bear spray. We wanted a real backcountry experience before school kicked in again. We picked a route north of Swan Lake. 5 miles off the trail, no cell signal, not a soul around. We set up camp in a small clearing. It was getting dark fast. We ate, messed around, lit a small fire, normal stuff. By 10 p.m., the fire was dying down, and we crawled into our tents. Jake and I shared one. Marcus and Darren had the other. I remember lying there, dead tired, thinking how silent it was. Not peaceful, silent. That kind of silence where you realize how loud the world usually is. Somewhere around 2 a.m., I woke up. No reason, just awake. I stayed still for a second, just listening. I didn't hear anything at first. Then I did. Footsteps. Not heavy, not rushed, just careful. Crunch. Pause. Crunch. Another pause. It wasn't from one direction. That's what got me. I started hearing it on all sides of the tent. First near my feet, then to the right, then directly behind me, on Jake's side. Like we were being circled, I nudged Jake, whispering, "Dude, you hear that?" He blinked, confused, but then froze. He heard it too. The look on his face told me enough. It didn't sound like a bear. No deep snorts. No crashing around. Bears are loud. This was deliberate. Sneaky. More crunches. Then it stopped. Total silence. Jake whispered, "What the hell is that?" I didn't answer. I reached for my flashlight and slowly unzipped the tent. My hands were shaking. I don't know why I expected to see a deer or something. I poked my head out and swept the flashlight across the dark. And I swear to God, I don't care if you believe me or not, there were eyes. Dozens. Just beyond the edge of the clearing, in the trees, reflecting the light back at me. Some were low to the ground, others higher. No sound, just eyes. Watching, not blinking, not moving. "Jake," I whispered, still aiming the light. "Look." He leaned out, saw it, and whispered, "What the fuck is that?" I yelled out then. "Hey, who's out there?" Nothing. Not one damn sound. Those eyes didn't flinch. Then Marcus called out from the other tent. "What's going on?" Jake hissed. "Shut up, shut up." The eyes didn't move. But I felt it. Something changed. Like they knew we were all awake now. And that was interesting to them. Then we heard something that made my heart drop. Something breathing. Not from the woods, right behind our tent. Long, slow, human-like breaths. I spun around with the light. Nothing. Just trees and the edge of the fire pit. Then every single eye vanished. All at once. No sound. Just gone. We didn't sleep. None of us. We sat up, knives and bear spray ready, flashlights pointed at every rustle. But nothing else happened. When the sun came up, we packed up in 10 minutes and got the hell out. No breakfast, no water, just out. We didn't talk the whole hike back.